Welcome to the World of Wisdom podcast. And my name is still Amit. And today I'm on another exploration in this archaeology work that we are doing around stories. And today my guest is David Vidales.
Yeah, thank you. Almost making me sound like a dinosaur there on an archaeological quest. But yeah, I'll take it.
I came across you in your quest for helping online course creators, and I took a 5-day challenge with you. And part of that 5-day challenge was for me to try to formulate my own story. And there was something really intense that was sparked in me there. And I was like, I heard you speak, and there was like all these tactics and ways to tell a story. And then you told your story, which had all those components, but then there was also so much heart in there. Like there was so much passion, and like it was genuine, you know, and it really connected with me. And so I was really curious to explore that aspect of tactics versus heart and the place of story in community building, and also in the place of how we can, in this sort of collected online digital moment, use story for something that is actually generative and that is true. That's to contextualize why I wanted to talk to you today. But before we get into all of that, I want to ask you the first question, which is just a very, very open, who are you,
David? Well, I love that question. Yeah, so it's, you know, you'll get a different reply depending on where we are kind of like the context, right? If we're talking more spiritually, I'll give you one reply. If we are more in a business setting, I'll give you another. But yeah, to keep it simple, I'm a guy in Stockholm, Sweden. I've lived here all my life. I lived 2 years abroad in South Korea. My parents are from South America. I'm about to turn 38. And yeah, my passion for pretty much all my life has been to build mission-driven communities. So that's the path that I took in life and that I explored and went deeper with. And at a later age, I started my own business, and I had a big yearning for freedom and to express myself, which resulted in me starting my own business, which is what I do for a living and for a calling. This is my mission in life, and my calling is to help others build and grow and monetize as well their own mission-driven communities. So yeah, and I happen to do that through information products, so online courses, and I help people create their online courses as well. So that's a bit about what I do. Maybe not who I am, but what I do.
Thank you. And when you say, do you want to expand on mission-driven communities? Like what does that
Yeah, of course.
Mean for you?
I grew up in co-living, like a big co-living here in Stockholm, Sweden during the 80s, right? And it was not the kind of like, you know, small apartment with four hippies. It was like a big complex with hundreds of people. But then it was different because every night we met down at a dining hall. So we were like hundreds of people and everyone knew each other. And we had like this schedule for when we helped to cook food and to clean the areas. And we had like shared spaces. So I grew up in an environment where it was very normal to leave the door open, not just, you know, unlocked, but we left it open and we could like run into the neighbor's apartment and everyone knew each other and just playing with all the other kids, etc. And I felt that I was very normal, you know. So it's kind of weird because I actually grew up very introverted, which you might not be the conclusion you would make from such an upbringing. But yeah, I also have that's a big part of me, that I need my personal space. So, but basically later on in life, when I was going through school and I was not, let's just say I wasn't a good fit. I've always been the kind of person that if something interests me, I'll do it for, you know, days without sleeping. But if it's not interesting, I'll fall asleep, you know? And sadly, school was that kind of a thing where I either got like the worst grades or the best grades, depending on, and my teachers couldn't make heads or tails out of that. Like, how is that possible? But yeah, that's what it was. And during that period, I really fell in love with video games. So specifically fighting games. And that's a story in and of itself, but I basically, it's the kind of game where you had to meet other people to play, and we didn't have enough opponents, I felt. So I started just as a 14-year-old guy, just putting more and more focus in my life on how do we gather more people so we can play with each other. And that's where I started to discover and learn about these principles that makes people want to come to you rather than you having to chase others. I kind of understood that. So we had like a rivalry between us and a nearby city in Uppsala. So we knew that they had sat down in a car and traveled all over Sweden to beat everyone and to prove they were the best. And we realized that for us to beat them, and they beat us horribly the first time we went to them. So we went back and we realized like for us to become better at them, we're gonna have to leverage that we are in a bigger city. And we're going to have to figure out how do you attract people and make them stay so we can practice with people and they can become better. And maybe if we can't beat them, someone in our community can beat them. So how do we create this? And that's how this whole idea of what if we make this mission driven? What if we make it our goal to become the very best, not only in Sweden, but in Europe? So we started, you know, we created a very strong message and brand. And that's how people started coming to us and staying. And we started a fighting game organization, and we bought the machines and we had them in the middle of the city and like an arcade shop. And you know, I was doing this as a 14-year-old. So it was an adventure. And yeah, you know, that's how I ended up in South Korea as well. You know, I just had to take my passion all the way to the end, you know.
Wow. I don't know where to take this. Do we want to launch straight into... Like you mentioned the principles of how to form a community and also how to have people stay and stick around.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's interesting, right? Like you can look at things like religion and politics and what makes someone want to stay a while and listen. You know, what makes someone want to do that? And some of the earliest mistakes we made was not having a clear identity and not having that clear enemy that, you know, like we're going to beat the guys in Uppsala and like practice with us together and be a part of that, you know. And we noticed that the bigger goal we had, the more attractive it was and the more of a family feeling, and we could create that like in and out kind of thing. And the clearer we were about the direction we were moving in and the clearer goals we had, like, it wasn't just to play around and have fun, but we were doing this with an intention in mind. You know, it was very like, if you want to do this at the highest level, there's no better place. So it was very inspiring to people. And people could also, when they were a part of that sort of environment, they improved so fast, right? Because we were doing things very seriously. Like whenever we got a new player, we put them through a regimen of like, they had to talk to me and we had to have like four sessions where taught them, gave them an introduction to the game, and then paired them up with another one similar to their position. And then each Friday we played, and we played throughout the whole night. And we also had like where we sat down together, like 30, 40 people, just looking at videos and practicing, like, what do we do? And then doing regular travels to Europe and analyzing videos. And like we took it as far as we possibly could with the tools that we had at our disposal, right? So we did it very seriously, we did it very passionately, and we gave it our all. And I think people felt a lot of safety in that when they came into this whole new world, that they could see that we weren't messing around, that we were there each and every day, and we were doing this. You know, I played this game every day for 15 years. I really, you know, really took it seriously. So they could really feel that we cared about them and that we wanted the best for them and that we were like a family for them, you know, yeah. And that it was something bigger than them.
And how do you see that community? And then I don't know if it's a contrast or what it is, but it's like the outcome. I mean, it sounds like you're also like very successful. And so like if you would have removed that success, what would the community standing have been?
Yeah, I think you can have a mission-driven community around any goal. It doesn't have to be that you're the best at something. It could be anything. I think I can't speak from experience, when it comes to that, though. But I think if you have a clear direction that, like, we are a community of people that love to play golf, you know, and the principles are that this is, if you are a golf player, then this is your home. Like, this is where you should be. And here you can network and connect with others just like you. So especially in the younger days, you know, when you're a bit younger, you're looking for your place in life and where you belong, right? So when we could put that in our message, it was very tempting, right? But I think people throughout their whole lives are looking for their true place in the world, always trying to find that place, right? So that should be the frame that, like, this, if you're this kind of person and you want this, then this is the place for you because you can connect and network with others just like you. This is the best place for you to develop in whatever it is you're trying to develop in. And this is where you can get the support and where you can celebrate with others and where others want the best for you as well. So all those principles is what I used later on when we moved into business, right? So, you know, for me, it has always been kind of surprising to see how much people are struggling to gather traffic, for instance, like online, because that really is like such a natural thing for me. It's just like, oh, it's just build a community around something bigger than yourself. And it's inevitable. People are going to come.
In the context that the sort of the World of Wisdom seed is kind of planted in is like, it's probably a little bit sort of new spiritual, like it's more of a like, oh, so how do we change the world? How do we collaborate? There's a lot of focus on that. And then it's also interesting to contrast and compare that to the story that I'm hearing you tell about sort of to create the in-group, you know, and to create that division between you and them and utilize that sort of innate possibility or power or like the programming. Yeah, tribalism. But also for good, you know, and also for like with the passion and with all of that stuff. And so, but what's your reflection on, because I don't know if you've looked into this, there's a whole community in the web that's called like Game B. And then they're saying like, oh, we're going to now let sort of go to the next iteration of humanity and we're going to move beyond competition and into a sort of integration. And we're going to be little communities, little tribes everywhere that are collaborating in the ways. And like, we're going to take this seriously and really
build a
new world.
Yeah, so let me just say that these people in Uppsala, the guys we were fighting against, they were some of our best friends. You know, we were asking them a bunch of questions like, how do we beat you? You know, and when you are at that level, you want someone to beat you. Like you wanna be beaten even though you're doing your absolute best, right? So they were coming over all the time and we were very open with them and they were very open with us that they were gonna try to stay number one in Sweden. We were gonna surpass them, you know. So the way I see competition is literally like in a game. Of course, when you're playing Monopoly with your friends, you want to beat the crap out of them, you know, but it's not like you have any ill feelings towards them. Like you're sitting there, you're having fun and you can even ask them questions, etc. And they ask you questions. And that's how I see competition in business as well. Like I'm very good friends with other people that are in my niche and that I'm trying to surpass, you know, but we find our way of winning together and it's still it's friendly competition, but it's, you know, to the bone. Like we really play hard.
But that's interesting because the goal isn't necessarily to annihilate somebody.
No, it's not to humiliate or anything like that. It's just to play at the highest level. And we know that when we get competition, that's how we grow as well, right? So that was the whole premises of the story, right? Like the only way for us to be better was to find people that could beat us, right? We were literally trying to find people. And if they weren't good enough to beat us, we tried to train them so they could beat us. The goal was always to fail while doing our best, right? So we were always like, it doesn't count as failure unless you're doing your best. And that is the goal. The goal is to play at your absolute best level and still lose, right? So it's a very different mindset and it's all about growing and developing and keep moving forward.
But that's so incredibly, I mean, to me, it's really unconventional what you're saying.
Yeah,
right
of course. But it was the only way we could become better, right? Because otherwise we would have avoided the people that could beat us. And we would have said, you can't play with us, right? But it was the other way around. You're always trying to find that person. So when I moved to South Korea, right, I was literally living with the best players in the world. And there's a huge difference between the 10 best players and the rest. Mm. And I got to like study their mindset right from the, we traveled all over South Korea when they were like qualifying for different tournaments and stuff like that. And it was blatantly clear that the difference here between the top 10 and the rest is that they all have teachers and they all teach. So they're all, it's not like get a mentor and screw the rest. You have to be a mentor as well. So you have to have a mentor and you have to be a mentor. So that was the biggest difference, that they have this, I don't know if you've ever heard of the culture in South Korea, but they have this like big brother, little brother social system. So everyone has that, but that's one of the reasons why they're so good at the game, is because they literally pair up in terms of three. So they have someone better than them, someone worse than them, and then they're trying to go up and not be surpassed from below, pretty much.
That's crazy. That's really, it's just putting a different lens to, because I had the whole encounter in the music industry. And so I was like a teenage pop star for like a bunch of years. And my sort of the lived experience that I had was that those that were at the absolute top, where there was like no prestige, they were always really nice people and they were really inviting and they would be generous and share and like bring you along and like share numbers and contacts and whatever.
Yeah.
And then you had sort of the second tier players, and that's where you had like this crazy competition, like the competition that we kind of think about in societies and at large as competition, like where you tried to cheat and, you know, sharp elbows and like hustle your way forward.
Yeah, so you got the people playing the zero-sum game, right? The people that think that the only way to win is to get it from someone else. And then you have the higher mindset that is like, let's create 1 + 1 = 3.
And also what I'm hearing you say, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but if I hear you say it right, then it's like when you have a mission-driven community in the way that you are phrasing that, then it's for the purpose of the mission. So the mission is first, and then you are secondary to that.
Yeah.
And so it's like the more that it's played, the further the game goes, that's the
Exactly. You know,
that's the passion.
And that's both good and bad, because when you have something that is so important in your life, everything else pales in comparison. So, you know, you don't care about drama or what someone is saying about the other person. You just want to become better at the game and you want to move forward. So, you know, I just stopped caring about school altogether. And like, it was like complete tunnel vision, right? I mean, it's good if you can make a living out of it somehow. I didn't make a living out of the game I was playing per se, but the valuable experiences I had and the life lessons I got, absolutely crucial for building my business later on, because it was the same principles in play, right?
And if you want to, then I'm just curious too, if we play out the chronology of your story,
sure.
Then. So you were 14 and you did this whole thing, and then you completely immersed yourself in that. You went to South Korea. You came, and at some point you start playing the game. Or like, what was the next iteration here of David?
So there was actually a big thing happening there in between, right? So I grew up, I was very disappointed at school at the time, and I couldn't see how it was helping me in any way. And I as I said, it was a lot of tunnel vision. And even though I could hang out with my friends in this very limited area of life, so to speak, I developed social anxiety, and I couldn't talk with people outside of this, and gained a lot of weight, and just struggling with, like, I could get like heart palpitations just leaving my house, because it was so so intense, right? So like I said, it's good and bad. And what you don't use, you lose. And because I wasn't socializing with people and I wasn't doing anything else, my brain just discarded that, you know? So I really developed that side of myself, my introvertedness. And I wasn't very happy. I didn't know, in Swedish we have the two words, glädje and lycka, which is like happiness and joy, that they're a bit different, right? So I could feel joy when I was playing this game and I was being with my friends, etc. But I did not know what happiness was. I was 14, 15, 20. Of course, most people might not know what that is at that age. But basically, the way I lived my life was to have part-time jobs and then saving up money and then trying to avoid going to work so I could just focus on this. And then I burnt the money going on trips in Europe to go to tournaments. So at a certain point, I had to get a job. I started working with my uncle at a time as a computer support at the Royal School of Music here in Stockholm, Sweden. And he was not, he neither had joy nor happiness. He was a lot of depression, wasn't feeling well at all. And it was a very hopeless situation. And, you know, a part of me always knew that it was a real possibility what was about to happen. But basically what happened was one night I got that call that he had committed suicide. And that was a very big wake-up call for me, and realizing where I was headed and realizing what happens if you don't follow your passion and if you don't mind the direction you walk in today, you're going to end up somewhere tomorrow where you might not want to be, right? And it was a very, you know, so this was my mother's little brother, right? So it was a very hard time for the family and coping with this. And in all that chaos, it kind of became too much. And it was just like a glimpse, but I got for the first time in my life, I don't know why, but I was sitting in a car with my friend the day after it had happened. And we were just out there driving on our road and we were out on the country and like looking at a meadow, like a field of grass. And just for a second or two, I had a revelation, and I was hit with happiness for the first time in my life. So they were very weird timing, but for some reason or another, I realized that if it was this sad that he wasn't living anymore, then how fantastic must this be that I still have, right? So the contrast was there, and I could just clearly look out and see that I was looking at the perfect field, the perfect meadow, because before that, I always had my own stories and expectations and everything. And in this chaos, it just broke through and I could just see things for what they were just for 1 or 2 seconds. And that question just came up to me, like, if you can hurt so many people by hurting yourself, what happens if you help yourself? How many people could you help? Like, mustn't the pendulum go the other way back? So then I also asked myself, well, what does it mean to truly live? What is this thing that I am experiencing now for the first time ever, for just 2 seconds before going back to normal? Like, how, I want to know more. I want to explore that more, you know? So I didn't have any idea of how to do that. I didn't know how. All I knew is that I wanted to know what it means to live and what it means to live fully. And that's when the only thing I had was playing that game, right? So I thought, well, what if I've just been thinking that I've been doing this all out? What if I actually do it all out? What if I just move to South Korea, like the best environment for me to get better and just follow my passion, you know? And to do it without any fear, because before it was fear that had stopped me, right? But now, like, let's do it. So I just packed my bags and moved there for 2 years, right? And yeah, I know it sounds kind of surreal, you know, telling it like this, but going there and getting more friends in like 3 weeks than I had all my life in Sweden, and being in this dreamland, you know, of like having hyped it up so much and watching all these videos of all these players and then suddenly living with them and traveling with them. And you know, at a certain point, so there was this arcade where they had like 40 machines and everyone was playing. It's like ear deafening. You can't hear anything. Everyone is playing the same game. And I was looking at these two guys and they were playing, it was at the highest level possible. And it just struck me like, they're just playing here and no one can see this except me. What a waste. Like, this is so wrong. So I just took up my cell phone and started shooting it, like recording, and asked them like, is it okay? And they were like, yeah, sure, go for it. And then I felt like an obligation to share it. So I just uploaded it online. And, you know, a few months after that, I had the biggest YouTube channel in the world for this game, right? And I also found that, you know, that tiredness that I had had in Sweden, where I was falling asleep on my way to school and back and everything, it was completely gone. And I could sleep like 5-6 hours per night. And I got a job as a community manager because this esport company discovered my YouTube channel. And then the boss at that work wanted me as an English tutor. So I was recording videos. I was finishing up my school grades. So that's how I could stay there. I was finishing all my school grades and I got the highest grades in absolutely everything just because I was having so much fun. I was working as like a English tutor for these players, right? Because they wanted to become better at English and they taught me the game in return. And I started selling these like parts, machine parts that people all over the world wanted. So I was going back and forth to the mailing office and partying every night. I don't think I was sober in 2 years. So it was a very intense and crazy period in my life. And in the middle of all that, that's where it suddenly hit me. Like the meaning of life is to thrive by helping others. So that's it. That, well, at least it's my meaning, you know? So then I knew I had gotten the answer to my question that got me to South Korea. What does it mean to live? It's to thrive by helping others. Mm. When we are in alignment with who we are and also serving a bigger purpose when it all aligns and you know it's right, then, and when you're doing that, when you're only doing that thing that only you can do, right? So I was in a very special position there, speaking English and working as a community manager. I started arranging so we arranged tournaments in Germany and France and started sending the South Koreans there. And then we got the Americans to come over there for the televised tournament. So it was just like a kind of like a dream come true kind of a thing. And then at a certain point, I felt like I had what I had been searching for, and I was ready to start my new life in Sweden. So I 2 years took me to get that realization, but then I came home with that in my luggage.
Wow. Yeah, it's super inspiring, I think. And it's also interesting to hear that, you know, I mean, it sounds like you were still able to keep that kind of, I mean, you were completely immersed in this parallel reality, but it seems like you also had a foot outside of like some observational capacity to also kind of reflect and see what was going on at the same time. Is that, was it there then? Or is it something that you found afterwards looking back?
Yeah. So I think it's partly genetic and then also socially, but from a very early age, I was always like in school, I didn't like being with other kids. I used to like go up in the forest and sit on a stone and ponder about life and like life questions. And I used to always space out and, you know, just my inner world kind of a thing. But the whole thing of moving to South Korea, where playing this game wasn't a fringe thing, you know, these players, they were on television. They were making like, not only because they were playing the TV tournaments, but they were doing like drama series where they were playing as themselves, but like as if they were like a whole story and everything. So they were being recognized on the streets by people. And it was the most normal thing ever, you know. You could go out like 3 or 4 in the night, just go and sit down at a restaurant and they're showing StarCraft on the on the television. So it's just completely normal. So I think that whole thing brought me back to the normal world, so to speak. So when I got back to Sweden, I was ready to leave the gaming behind me. I thought it was time to like build a new life for myself, and that I had 15 good years of pursuing my passion all out, and now I wanted to explore this new path that was in front of me.
So that's cool. So you kind of left, you were in Sweden with this thing as a side thing, which was kind of, it was your passion and you were being pulled towards it, but it wasn't the real life because you still had to maintain all this other stuff. And then going to South Korea, you could then sort of submerge yourself and it could be the normal life. And so you were fully integrated and then you could kind of step up. Like that sparked the possibility to step out of it? Is that?
Yeah, it was the whole thing of just socializing because, you know, in Sweden, I'd never drank a beer. Like I'd never been out. I'd never done anything, right?
Yeah.
It was just me avoiding school and being down at in someone's cellar and playing this game for, you know, forever, right? So I didn't have the social skills, and the social skills I had were very limited to people, you know, that were, let's put it mildly, nerds. I had a lot of catching up to do, to put it like that, right? But then going to Korea, it was like, okay, let's play some games. Okay, now we're going to go out to party, and then we're going to go out to eat. And, you know, when you party in Korea, you know, if you ever want to see something shocking, check out the, you know, alcohol consumption compared to Russia. It's like 5 times more. It's crazy. So it's like, a regular night out on a Tuesday is like starting at like 8 o'clock, and then you go eat dinner and drink. And the problem is that the alcohol costs like $0.50 for like a bottle. So it's like 50 cents. So they don't actually make any money. They actually lose money on the alcohol, but you can't drink without eating. So what we do is we eat at like 6 restaurants in one night. Okay. And just to drink, right? So it's like eating, and for some reason you don't gain weight because it's just like vegetables and stuff like, it's just super healthy food, you know? Even so, pretty crazy that you can do that 5 days a week and still get away with it.
And so coming back then to Sweden, where did it, so when you were putting, because I'm supposing you're still like once a gamer, always a gamer, like you were still playing for fun then, but it wasn't your kind of main occupation?
No. So I stopped playing completely, but I do follow, I watch the tournaments and I talk with them on Messenger and I stay in touch. But in those days, I was still under the impression that you can have wasted time, right? So I saw this as, this was fun, but I wasted way too much time on this. I had to like catch up and become an adult pretty much, you know. So I kept it at a minimum and I watched the videos, followed it because I still loved it, of course. But I never, I didn't want to keep playing it, if that makes sense. I took another direction.
And where was that? Where were you headed?
Yeah, my friend, he had been he had been renting my room when I was gone, right? So when I came back home, unfortunately, I had to kick him out. And then in doing so, he had a stack of books in my room. And when I came here, I had a high school degree. I have managed to get that in South Korea, but I had nothing, like nothing on my CV. Like it was bad, you know. And I was like no money, nothing. I was literally starting from scratch here at the age of 27. Right. But he had this stack of books and I was just like taking them out. And then for some reason, luckily, one book just caught my interest. And I looked at it and it said like Confessions of a Pickup Artist. So I was like, well, what is this? I had never heard of this before, you know, like Confessions of a Pickup Artist. And at this time, I had never had a girlfriend or anything like that. So I just started reading through this. And I was so captivated that he was telling a story of how he had changed himself. And to me, it was just magical. Like I could make the connection that, wow, like all that time, effort, energy I had put into becoming better at a game. What if I could like treat myself as a something that can be developed? What if I can actually like deliberately build myself into who I want to be and having the life I want to have? That is just mind-blowing, you know. So it just completely opened up my mind, and I sat down with a pen and paper and started to write down the different areas of life that I would like to. So I started to attack this as if it was the game, right? So, okay, how do I solve this problem? What is the goal? What do I want? How do I bridge the gap? How do I get there? What's standing in my way? What do I need to do? And, you know, at the top was basically overcome my social anxiety, being able to talk with people, social skills, being able to make friends in Sweden. I didn't know how to do that here. You know, I didn't have a job, so get a job. I also wrote down, be happy no matter what. So that was an important thing for me. I just didn't want to waste more time going around being sad. It just felt so counterproductive and like a waste of time. Yeah, that's where it all started, you know. And I got like pretty much the worst job you can get. Like in Swedish, it's called Svensk Direkt Reklam. So I was like walking around with a trolley, like giving out the newspapers, like commercial kind of a thing. I was doing that for like, I can't believe that's legal. Like the amount of pay you get, it's so bad. And, you know, when I got there, they were like, oh, you speak Swedish. Oh, you get the job. the qualifications weren't very high, you know. But I needed a job while I was looking for something else. And then I was lucky enough to get a job at a go-kart track in Stockholm. And that's really where things started to take off for me, because I got to finally hang out with cool guys, having fun, and I got to practice my social skills, and I was working in the reception, but that wasn't really enough for me. So what I did to overcome my social anxiety is I started to go out and I set up like missions for myself to like go to the grocery store, talk with the cashier, give her a smile, just have a cold conversation with someone, just see if you can advance a conversation with someone and just give someone a high five on the street, something like that. And yeah, I just started working on me very, you know, afterwards, I realized that what I had done was actually create a cognitive behavioral therapy plan for myself. Like that's what it was. But I didn't know anything about that at the time. I just like, okay, I'm going to do it like the game. I know this is about practice and about stepping outside my comfort zone and being consistent and doing it no matter what, and having a plan and following the plan. So it was like sitting down with pen and paper, like, how am I going to become social, pretty much. Obviously, you know, if once you realize you can do anything at the age of 27, you definitely want to have a girlfriend as well, and you want to be able to talk with girls and have those skills as well. So yeah, just for the first time in my life, I started to take it a step further and like start going out to the club. That was kind of a scary thing, as you can imagine. Like just a few months earlier, I was scared to go into the grocery store. Now I was at a nightclub with like Hell's Angels, like 10 feet away, trying not to hit on their girlfriends, trying to figure out who is who. Just pushing myself beyond what I thought was possible and finally starting to feel comfortable taking up more and more space and not being the person that's always in the back and in the corner holding the drink like this, but actually, you know, going out. And in Swedish, we say bjuda på dig själv, which is like to give of yourself, right? And yeah, so yeah, I got into my first relationships and started having those kinds of experiences. And it was always on this path of, what happens when I help myself? Well, then I can share my personality and I can make other people happy as well. And I started studying philosophy at the university. I did that for 4 years before like continuing it was always on this personal development path. And it pushes you towards business. That's what business is. It's to help people, right? So it was always pushing me towards that. So I started writing books about personal development. And then I realized that if you write a book, you can sell it for $10. But if you write the same thing as an online course, you can sell it for $10,000. You know, the difference is night and day. So being stuck doing coaching where my time was limited, my reach was limited, and the impact I could make and everything was limited, I stepped into this new space and started leveraging that I had created my YouTube channel before. I knew how to do video editing. I knew how to build a mission-driven community. I had practiced doing online courses. And now it was just the sales and the marketing part. And like, wow, that was so similar to going out there and trying to talk with women, etc. How do you, you know, present yourself? So it was all coming together. And I could finally see that everything I had been through served its purpose and was meaningful for what I was trying to do. Nothing was wasted. It was all necessary and it was all helpful.
But so this is so fascinating to hear you speak, and then also like I'm being pulled in by your by the story and like what you're saying, and then I'm also reflecting that, or something that came to me is like I'm spoken from a different place. A lot of the words that you were saying could like also constitute like somebody that I really couldn't relate to. But it's not no I with you, and like that was a story that's just kind of same brings us back to that intro that I said with the storytelling in the 5-day challenge that I took with you. It's like there was something around the description of the thing that made me feel like, oh, I don't want to really, that's a lot of resistance for me. And then I heard your story like with your words, and then there was the passion and the depth and the heart and the life, and there's a lot of doing, but it's a doing connected to the being, and it's really, I don't know, you seem like a really well integrated person to me, and it's just fascinating to hear the words of business. I mean, you also said that as like a byline now. You said something like business is to help people. Yeah. And I'm like, when you say it, I'm like, yeah. And then I was like, wait, I've seen different types of business.
Helping people from the sense of answering market needs, right? So we get what we pay for. If we pay people to keep cows in small confined places and take their kids away, you know, etc., then that's what we get. That's the help we get. So it's the consciousness has to go on all levels. And I would place it first and foremost on the consumer, but it's on all of us.
And and the way you describe it as well, I mean, it's not extractive. It's like it's beyond growth. It's more. There's a guy, a systems thinker, who keeps talking about like increase economics. So like it's kind of the Kate Raworth version of the world where it's like a donut. Like you have the outer planetary boundaries, you have the inner little like hole in the circle. Like you don't want to be inside that because then you're kind of falling off the cliff. You're below the poverty level or whatever. However you define that, however you quantify that, but still you're like there's a place in between that you don't want to fall into, and then. So how do we grow in that confined space? And then what he was talking about then was that, okay, so let's just increase the density, like the relational density and like the depth. And like we have to expand in different dimensions. If we can't grow out or in, then we have to grow like in another dimension, at another axis, so to say. And also like the relations that we have, if we can grow them. And it seems like that's kind of what you're talking about. When you think about business, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, so I really, how do I put this? So there's this idea that the sole purpose of a business is the pursuit of profit and that it's a competition-based activity. But look at the biggest businesses in the world. They have big visions, right? They get people. People don't buy a Tesla. They buy the future, right? Like they're a part of history. They buy Elon Musk's vision to colonize space. Like, and they know that that's what they're supporting when they buy a car. Like, how has he been able to connect those two things, right? And it's because General Motors or Ford are not trying to go to Mars, right? So it's like building a community without that big vision. Like, it falls flat and it only works for a while until something better comes along, until Amazon comes along, you know, wanting to provide everything to everyone now. It's like it's this grand vision, right? If you read his letters to his shareholders, it's amazing. Like the way he thinks, it's so attractive. It's a true leader, right? But what's the name of the guy that runs Ford? I don't know. I've never heard of that guy, you know? So I think capitalism and the business is moving in this space where it's going to be survival of the fittest. And if you do not have a big vision, then people are not going to go with you. If you don't have values that are being portrayed through your brand and your marketing, then you'll be playing for scraps.
And how do you see that in relation to kind of what we were talking, like what you mentioned as well, like with the cows and the pens and we're stealing their babies and then we're shooting them in the head, you know, kind of in the worst possible conditions you could imagine, you know, and
yeah.
And so how do you square that circle?
Yeah, no, I mean, one of the reasons that works is because they get subsidies. right? So the true cost of milk, for instance, is actually much, much, much higher. So other alternatives can't compete on a fair. And you know, why in Swedish schools are people being taught that they need to drink milk when they obviously don't? If we get to play on an even playing field, I think that the best one wins. At the end of the day, we're not gonna, the world is not gonna go plant-based because of ethics. It's gonna be go there because of economic reasons. Because breeding animals to get like 1% of all the calories they take in is inefficient. It's not efficient to do it like that, right? So it's gonna, it's just gonna be more effective for us to be plant-based or to do it like homegrown lab or something like that. But, you know, on an individual level, and now this is like taking another turn in the conversation, but on an individual level, if I talk with someone, then I just try to focus the conversation around personal responsibility. Like when you look at videos of how animals are treated in the animal industry, how do you feel about that? Okay, you don't feel good. Would it be safe to say you're against animal abuse? Yes. Do you think it's possible to be against animal abuse while you're creating demand by buying these products? And then there's a difference there between what someone is and what they want to be. And then that should, then we can continue the conversation from there. And that's on an individual level, right? Because we always want to go like, yeah, but what do we do as a society, et cetera, et cetera. But if we like, no, I'm talking about you and me here. You say you have these values, yet you are paying someone to do the opposite. How do you get that together, right?
Wow. Yeah. And that's this curiosity kind of that is sparking in me. It's like there's a discipline and there is a, I don't know if there's a practice probably at the foundation of it, like at the base of this, that like or a capacity. And but what I'm feeling is like, okay, part of me says that you've had a lot of that capacity with you, like innately. But I've also seen you, I mean, you're also training people to build that capacity. And so like, where do you, like, I don't know if nature nurture is like the right, you know, that's not the right framing for it, but it's how much is teachable or learnable and how much is...
Yeah, so I'd say 90% of the issues we run into with clients are rooted in mindset, right? It's because it's this, look, so when I was running the community here in Sweden for fighting games, that was the only reason why someone wouldn't become the best in Sweden, right? Because they had a counterproductive mind. It's kind of like, imagine your hand goes up and holds your mouth when you want to say something. Like, that wouldn't be very helpful. That's exactly what your mind does if it's not set up correctly. It will tell you to shut up even though you want to talk, right? As long as you identify with the mind that this is me and I'm the one thinking these things, et cetera, et cetera, instead of seeing this as, no, I am a goal-oriented being. I am not a human being. I am a human becoming. I am always turning into something. And I get to choose in which direction I move, right? So I was sitting in that car. I could choose to ignore that question or I could choose to follow it. It's all about choices and the consequences they bring and taking full responsibility for them, right? So as soon as you start seeing your mind as a tool to achieve your goals, you can step back from it and like, oh, that's interesting. I'm having these thoughts. Oh, that's interesting. My mind is telling me I shouldn't go up and talk to that beautiful woman. Well, then I should definitely do it, right? So it all comes down to our relationship to resistance. Like, what do we do when met with resistance? Do we go back or do we go through it or do we go around it? What do we do? And if we look back at our lives, we can see patterns. What did we do when things got hard? Did we ease up? Did we start pointing fingers? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Growing up, becoming an adult is about taking responsibility and working through problems, not avoiding them. Because when we do that, we start getting success, and success is built on success, and that's how we move forward.
Yeah, and you could probably change, you know, success for trust or a bunch of different sort of positive value.
Yeah, I mean, and any sort of definition you have of what it is you're trying to achieve, right?
And to bring it back then to story. Now we're speaking of the individual responsibility, and then but then also kind of like the way that you coach your clients and the relationship to sort of the bigger story that you see. So like you want to thrive by helping people, and the people are existing in a context. And so, like, how do you think about that? Sort of, how does this cascade in a sense? Like, what is the, in your bigger vision of like helping, I don't know how many thousands of people you've already helped and like how many you would like to help and so forth like that. But how does it cascade? Like, what happens? What happens there in the end? Like, what's your...
Yeah, cool. Yeah, so remember how I said nothing is wasted, right? So if I look back at my life, I see a lot of years in school that were not put to good use, right? So in whatever way I can contribute to solving that, my dream vision is that no kid should ever have those kinds of experiences again. I wanna change education from the ground up. I wanna change what education is. I wanna change it from being an informative process where you come and you learn something. I want it to be a transformative process. It's more about teaching kids right from a very early age on how to set up goals, how do we hold ourselves accountable, how do we do things, how do we figure out what we want, how do we figure out how to get that, what is it that works, what is it that doesn't. I want to bring this whole thing there, and I want school to be about transforming kids and helping kids on their path to follow their path, their unique path, not put everyone into the same box, if that makes sense. So that, you know, at the moment I can't see it clearer than that. I just know I wanna help people understand, wanna help people make a living by transforming other people. And in doing so, I am confident that it's gonna keep spreading out and opportunities are gonna open up.
Because I'm in a space at the moment where I'm kind of hanging out with a metamodern crowd and like a crowd that are identifying as change makers. And kind of so am I. Like I also have that sort of grand vision. I want to create something. And then at the same time, I'm sitting with a story where I also believe that we have everything that we need. Everything is exactly the way that it should be. And so from this moment, we have all these like amazing possibilities. And it is around mindset, and it's around sort of the trajectory and the rate of change and like how we can build that, whatever, the next step. Like it matters what like even if we only have, you know, some fraction of a degree to course correct the next step. Like if we do that with every step, eventually we're going to come full circle. It's a long journey, but there's still that possibility. And so what I really appreciate in this conversation is your direction, because you seem to have a lot of the language that I hear used around this stuff is kind of, it's a lot softer. It's a lot sort of more, let's say, being oriented. It's more, it would be nice if, you know, and then you come, the way that you phrase this and frame it, the way that I'm hearing you is like it's with a lot of direction and with a lot of responsibility and with a lot of, also with a lot of fire and like and force, you know. It's like woof. but how do you sit in that place without kind of burning yourself out? Like where does it come from?
Great question. So remember, I put on my list to be happy no matter what. That's where it all starts. I had to go through that process and realize why I am happy no matter what. Like, there's no external thing. There's not even an internal thing that can do anything about that fact. I'm just happy no matter what, period. There are no reasons to it, because if there was reasons, then take away the reasons and I'm not happy anymore. I just start by being happy. And it's that, for me at least, it was that deep realization that opened up the door to everything else. I really think that for you to work as effectively and as productively as possible and to really be present with other people, you need to be kind of sorted out on the inside, and you need to have your emotional state under somewhat of a control and be able to deal with adversity. Again, how do you deal with resistance in a mature way? And for me, it was very having that anchor in my life, that have understanding why I am happy no matter what, and there's nothing I can do to change that fact, and there's nothing anyone else can do either. It's just something I'm going to have to live with, that I am happy no matter what. And when that is taken care of, then everything you do is from that paradigm where, so I'm just in this game. I get to choose what to do with it. Like, do I want to set up goals or not? Like, what do I want to do here? And it's not right or wrong. It's just what I want to do. And from my point of view, a calling is something that comes from the outside. It's not something that comes from the inside. A calling is someone or some or a group of people calling you, saying that they need your help, and you get to choose if you wanna serve or not. So I hear a lot of people out there telling me that they are not doing what they love, they're not following their passion, they're not living life the way they were hoping, they're not living all out, they're not setting up their goals and going for them, and they're not sure of what to do and what their place is in life, etc., etc., etc. I find myself in a position where I don't know if I can help someone do that, but I do know that I have the tools that worked for me and that have helped a lot of other people. And I am sharing them to the best of my abilities and trying to get the message out there.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this was a really wonderful conversation and kind of different from what I've had before. And it's really in a really good way. So I'm very grateful for you to set off the time and
thank
do
you,
this
Amit.
With me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
And two things, I want to in the end, I want to do you can, so people can get in touch with you and find you and stuff online. But before that, is there anything else that you wish would have kind of come or that needs to be said or that's alive in you that you'd want to presence?
Yeah, good question. This is the kind of thing you should think about before, right? No, it's I think it's hard to, I can't know for sure if the purpose of life is the same for everyone. I do think that life can be seen in a way as if we find ourselves in a small village and there's a lot of bricks and boulders to carry and there's a lot of stuff to be done, right? And a part of life is to basically pick up the biggest rock you find and contribute. And the way you can pick up the biggest rock is by you working on yourself. You can become a stronger person, right? So I really think that there's something in us that gives us a lot of joy, not happiness, but joy in being able to do that, in finding that rock that only you can carry, that unique thing that you can contribute to, and the way that your place in the village that is worth picking up. It, and it's worth it. If you don't know what that is, then your job is to figure that out.
Cool. Thank you. And so how can people find you online? And why should they find you online? I think it might
be
clear by now.
If they found this interesting, I mean, so that I can tell you a bit about how I help my clients. So I typically work with beginners and intermediates, people that are usually very, very good at what they do, but not maybe so good at sales and marketing. And they might not have the same experience with building a mission-driven community. And if you listen to this and you're interested in how this can be turned into to business, how you get leads and how you get customers, etc., based on a larger vision and how you build a mission-driven community around your cause and around your movement, then you're more than welcome to join my Facebook group. It's called Online Course Secrets. And I guess you're going to put the link as well, Amit. So I typically help people to go through these three phases. We figure out your mission, your message. We build a mission-driven community based around that. Then in the second phase, we listen in and we find the best way that you can help your audience in the form of an information product. So I help people create a hybrid between coaching and training. And so you get to work directly with your audience, but at scale. So you can help as many people as you want while still maintaining that connection. And this is for you if you want to learn how to sell. We do high ticket offers. So it's something that you can sell for at least $2,000. And then I really help people with the sales and the marketing and how to do it in a way that's congruent with you and your values without ever pushing or pulling or any sort of thing. Business is about helping people. So our whole philosophy is how do we provide value at each stage of the customer journey. That's what we do.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and I'll be the testimonial as well to say that for me in my process, that short interaction that I had with you in the course as a course creator, as a coach, it was incredibly helpful, how clear you are in and you have the methods and the drivers. And for a person like me as well, who was also kind of mentally focused. It's really good to get the explanation and then get to get it seen. And you're very clear in your description. So I can recommend whatever you do, just kind of click in and check it. Because even for me, who's not necessarily see myself as a course creator, is incredibly useful nonetheless. And it's put me on, you've changed my life a little bit, David.
Thank you.
That 5-day thing.
I appreciate it.
And I think it's for the better. So yeah, me too. I'm awesome. Really grateful for that.
Thank you, Amit. I appreciate you.